There was a moment when no one moved. It was so anticlimactic. They had been out in the war, been fired on, shot it out with the enemy, and then returned. Now the captain finished the meeting, and that was it. Back to work. Slowly, they stood and began to shuffle out of the briefing room. Kincaid was one of the last to leave. He walked down the passageway to his cabin, still thinking about everything that had happened. Men dead for an ideal that no one could articulate. It didn't seem right. He gave the handset to Stokes, took a step, and froze. There was something wrong around him. Like all the bad movies he'd seen as a kid, he realized that it was too quiet. Suddenly, in that one moment, he understood exactly what all those play-acting soldiers had meant. There was no sound around him. Nothing from the insects or birds or animals. The only thing was the ever-present distant boom of artillery. Nothing from the enemy now. Holding up a hand, he dropped to one knee. Using the corners of his eyes, he searched the ground around him, looking for a clue. Where in the hell had the enemy gone?
"Is Lieutenant Ballard in trouble, sir?" Marston asked.
"No, not at all, but someone else is, Corporal. Lieutenant Ballard has been found dead in his quarters. Thanks for your help."
Colt turned and walked away across the parade grounds and its frozen ground and a half inch of stubborn, icy snow. By the time Colt got back to Ballard's quarters, his body had been taken away. Colt examined the three rooms critically. He lit all three lamps and put them in the same room and carried one, going over the place inch by inch. After 2 hours, he had found nothing out of place, nothing that would give him any clue as to who the killer was. Not a boot mark, not a dropped hat, or a scrap of paper.
"I guess I didn't make myself clear. As the ranking officer on board, I am ordering you to remain on station until I have my troops into the trees and moving."
"No, sir," said Tate. "I didn't make myself clear. As the aircraft commander, whatever I say takes precedence, especially when the safety of the aircraft is involved. We are heading back now, and if you want to take it up with a higher headquarters later, you will find that military regulations back me up on this one."
The aircraft banked around until Kuchi was visible through the windshield. They leveled out and began the trip toward the refueling point.
"Major," said Lambert, "I hope that we can hurry."
Tate hesitated, then said,
"Of course."
Lambert was silent for nearly a minute. Finally, he said,
"And we will discuss this once this mission is complete."
McRyan put his Explorer into gear and motored east on Grand towards downtown St. Paul.
"So, what do we have?"
"Body in an alley behind the mahogany," Lick answered. "Beyond that, I don't know much."
"A murder behind the competition. That should make Seamus happy," Max said.
Seamus was Max's uncle, and he ran the other family business. McRyan's pub, which sat on the southwestern edge of downtown St. Paul. Schmidt sat back suddenly and ran a hand through his hair.
"I want to get someone else on station. Someone with a little more time in country."
No one moved, no one spoke. Suddenly they were all interested in their food or their drinks or the radios. Not one of them looked up at Schmidt.
"Hell, sir,"
Harper heard himself saying.
"I'll go back in. I'm familiar with the AO.
"You been drinking?"
Harper grinned broadly, looked Schmidt in the eye, and lied.
"No, sir. Bought those helicopter boys a dinner and some coke."
"No booze?"
Harper didn't consider beer to be booze. Beer was like a coke, no more deadly. At least he believed that for the moment, because he had to.
"No booze."
Then,
"One beer."
"Those boys will be working half the night to haul their leader back to their camp," Hayward said when he returned to the bar. "That pig has got to go 300 or better."
"Thanks," Tallman said, his tone sincere.
"No problem, Turk. I'll throw my cards in with any man that's willing to stomp a bastard like Tinker Morton. Especially one that's willing to do it to save a lady's honor."
They both laughed, because they knew that it was more than the honor of a saloon girl. Much more. It was plain and simple fun to bust the skull of someone like Tinker Morton.